just a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff, all right? And then there was a side where you had to learn the grammar, all right? And Julie and I we had two kids at the time, and I was working, and I was taking all these classes, and I mean, I had a hard time memorizing the name of my two children. You know, I couldn't memorize anything, you know. So I went to my professor and said, listen, I just can't do this. It just doesn't work for me. I can't do it. And I said, so what I've decided to do is I'm going to focus on the grammar. And if I memorize something along the way, great. But I'm not going to work too hard at it, all right? So literally, whenever I took a test, if it was a test based on memorization, I would flunk that test. But if it was a test based on grammar, I would ace that test. So at the end of the semester, I got a good solid C is what I got out of that old thing. The grammar of Greek, of Koine Greek, is really very, very interesting because of how they structure their sentences speaks volumes as to what they're trying to say. And the different tenses and moods of their verbs. Again, if you know what the tense is, if you know what the mood is, it's like, whoa! I mean, it's very cool. It is very, very cool. In this particular passage, you see the interplay of a particular tense and a particular mood. And I don't care if you ever remember the words I use, but it's very, very important for us, if we're going to go forward, that we understand how the Holy Spirit is inspiring Matthew to hype this, to emphasize this, to get it on out there. Now, the guys back in the first century, they would read this stuff and they'd get it immediately. But you and I, that's not how we talk. That's not English grammar, you know, it's Greek grammar. So we don't get it, all right? But this is huge. This is huge. There is a tense that is called the aorist tense. It's called the aorist tense. And the aorist tense is about an action that has a deliberate start and a completion. But then later on, you're going to do it again. And you're going to do it again. And you're going to do it again. So the aorist tense speaks of an action that we deliberately start and is completed, but it is repeated. It's ongoing. It's like never ending. You're going to do it again. In the text that's in front of us, the word go is in the aorist. The word baptize is in the aorist. And the word teach is in the aorist. So when we're talking about going, we're talking about deliberately going, getting to our destination, but then later on, deliberately going and getting to a destination, and then later on, deliberately going, and it's going to go on and on and on and on and on forever. Same thing with baptize, same thing with teach. That's the tense of these verbs. Now, let me do it like this. When you hear the word imperative, what do you think? What do you think? Tell me what you think when you hear the word imperative. What, say it again. Necessary. What does someone say? You must. Give me something else. Urgent. Someone over here said command. Now, all of that is absolutely right, but it's not completely right. Because the imperative in the Greek is not so much a tense as it is a mood. Let me do this. If you have an imperative in the discussion, all right, you had 8 or 9 verses there, and you got an imperative right in the middle, then all of the other actions are influenced by that imperative. All of the other actions are colored, they're spiced with that imperative. Whatever the other actions are, the thing that dominates those actions is the imperative. Now, an imperative, just for those of you who like to take notes, an imperative is a high demand. So you are right when you says it's a, someone said it's necessary, someone says it's a command. You're absolutely right. But it's not just like the command of a peer, you know. It's not like that. This is a high demand. This is coming from a very authoritative place. If we're going to use the imperative mood, we are implying that whatever is being said is coming from a very high place of authority. The other thing that an imperative mood is about is that the imperative mood kind of casts a shadow on every other action there. It influences every other action. It's right there. It creates the mood that these other actions are going to be carrying out. Are we good? Are you tracking with me? Because I know this is not the kind of seminar I was expecting. We don't talk about these things, but this becomes very, very important because now we're going to break down this passage and we understand that the aorist is used when it talks about go, baptize, and teach. The imperative is used, make disciples. So, as an example, when you deliberately go, you are influenced by the fact that a high demand has been set on your life. So you're not just going, you're going to make disciples. When we talk about baptizing, we're going to talk about baptizing. When we're baptizing, we're not just baptizing because it's some kind of religious rite. And okay, I'm going to tell you a true story here, as long as you don't squeal on me and get me in trouble, all right? So I am the only non-Methodist person on the leadership team of the church that I serve at, all right? Everybody else is Methodist. And we decide that we're going to leave the Methodist denomination, and that's cool. And so we leave. Bob, I tried to get him to join Elam. I ain't got him there yet, but I'm moving him, you know. And so we left the Methodist denomination, and now we're sitting down, and we're writing down the things that are important, you know. And so we start talking about baptism, and the conversation is, you know, are we going to baptize infants? Are we not going to baptize infants? What are we going to baptize? Are we going to baptize? What is it going to be? Is it going to be immersion? Is it going to be sprinkling? They're just going on with all this religious crapola. Crapola is a Greek word. You know, all this stuff they're talking about, you know. And finally, the straw that broke the proverbial camel's back was, and we need to log every baptism. And I'm going, all right, enough. I'm done with this. This is not. And I was very controlled. And I was very respectful. And I was very courteous. Probably none of those three. But anyway, and I said, guys, when are we going to wake up to the fact that baptism is not an end point? It is not a conclusion. Baptism is the starting place. And it's like they all looked at me through their Methodist lenses and said, "Do you have an interpretation of that tongue?" You know, they were not getting it. They were not getting it. And so we had to have a long, drawn-out conversation about these things. And now I think we've got it. Now I think we've got it. So we're in a good place. Baptism is not about a religious rite. It's about an act, and we're going to talk about that. It's about an action that is taken because we are making disciples. See, because that's the dominant thing. That's the imperative. The imperative is make disciples. And when we're teaching, it's got nothing, almost nothing to do with books and note-taking and schools. And it's got almost nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is making disciples. So the making disciples part, which is in the imperative, is the thing that influences every one of the actions that are set in place. Are you following with me? Are you good? We're good? I can go on? I should go on? Does somebody have a question? I mean, yeah. Are we good? Is anybody kind of saying, what the heck is he talking about? Sounds like Greek to... Yes, we have a professor in the room. So here we go. Here we go. Now we're going to go at it. We're going to go at this. All right? Here we go. He says, all authority has been given to me. Now go. Now go. Better translation is as you go. It's not so much leave where you are and go to there as much as it is you're going. It's the process. Bottom line. Bottom line. Can I just give you the bottom line? We should be a people on the move. We should be the people on the move. Now, I don't, John, I'm not saying that. I mean, we're just getting a building here. I'm not telling you to leave. What I am saying is we should be actively on the move. We should be deliberately on the move. In your workplace, you should be on the move. Not just to get your job done, though I think you should get your job done, but you should be on the move asking yourself, where are the opportunities to make disciples? You need to be on the move. We need to be on the move. And here we go. I want you to, one of our favorite phrases at Christ United is unconnected friends. Can you, and by the way, you should be able to identify by name your unconnected friends. And I want to tell you the truth. This is just the truth. I've been a pastor for like, I don't know, 110 years, all right? Okay? So it's like 99% of all the people I know are Christians. You know? So when's the last time you shared the gospel with someone? I think I was on a plane, and there was a mother with a child that was out of order. And I prayed for him. So one of the things I do is if you come to my workspace in my home, I got a computer here and I got the stack of books here and I got things scattered all over everywhere. And what I have is a list of people. It's about 7 people on that list that I won't say every time because I don't say every, but often when I sit down at my desk, I will pray through that list. And you know who's on that list? Julie's co-workers. Because she has a zillion unconnected friends. I don't have hardly any. And so I am engaged in prayer for those nurses, those physical therapists, and those aides, and those doctors that Julie has often told me they are not connected to the grace of God. They are not connected to Jesus. They are not connected to a community. And I've gotten very, very close to these 7 people just by praying for them all the time. So a list that I want to give you, who should be on your list of unconnected friends? Someone who's under your roof. You may have someone living with you. Might even be one of your kids. That is just not connected. Anybody? Huh? There may be someone at your workplace that you regularly engage with or at your school who is just not connected. There may be someone that you share an activity with. When our boys were growing up, they were very, very involved in sports. And because, I mean, for real, it's no overstatement. I had more opportunity to share Christ with people as a coach at the YMCA than I did as a pastor of Elam Christian Fellowship. I mean, that was where, so there may be people that you have a shared activity with. It might be the drama club that your kid's in, or it might be the volleyball team that your kid's in, or it might be maybe you play saxophone and you're part of the community band, or maybe you live in an HOA and you're a member of that HOA. God help you. And it's a shared activity. The only reason you see this person is because of this shared activity, but because of this shared activity, you see this person all the time. Who's praying for this person? If not you, who is praying for this person? You hear what I'm saying? On this list should be people in your neighborhood or your development, however you live. Praying for, or a friend or a family member, praying for them. Each one of us, as we go, need to be praying as we go for our unconnected friends. And then it goes on and it says, as you go, make disciples. I mean, that's what it says. As you continue to go, whoever you go to, wherever you go, you must always have it in your mind and in your heart. You need to be alert to the opportunities to make disciples. So I took a class a while ago, and I took it through Zoom. I'm excited about Zoom. I realize that you people have known about it forever. Me, I just found out about it 10 minutes ago, you know. And I'm all excited about Zoom. And we're in this class right here, in this class. And there's a guy from Brooklyn and Michigan and from Herkimer and from Virginia and from, you know, they're all over the place. And I'm there to take the class. That's what I'm there to do. You know, I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to take the class. I'm taking notes. I'm doing my homework. I'm acing this puppy, let me tell you. I'm taking the class, all right? But there's a guy over here, his name is Chauncey. Young guy. And I don't really, I mean, he's just one of my classmates. He's just a guy, you know. But something happened during class that we had a connection. That, now I'm confessing my sin here is what I'm doing. I wasn't looking for a connection. I wasn't looking for an opportunity. I was just looking to complete the class. Is it 2 weeks ago he called me? 2 weeks ago, Chauncey calls me from Brooklyn. Hey, Brother Randy, remember me? It's Chauncey. Yeah, Chauncey. Would you mentor me? Would you mentor me? See, the point of that story is you have absolutely no idea the impact you have on people. You have no idea. Well, what if we had an idea and we'd be alert to it and ready to respond to it? What could God do then if when we're clueless, he could do this kind of stuff? So he and I are getting together on Zoom. You guys still aren't impressed by that, are you? Not at all. So as you go, and you'll go again, and then you'll go again, and then you'll go again, as you go, your job is going to change. So you're going to go from going to, well, now I'm going. Your role in the church is going to change. Well, you're going to go from going to going. things are, you're going to move into a new neighborhood. So you're gone from going to going as you go. Be aware. Be alert to the mission. Your going is all about making disciples. It's not just a coincidence. It's not just a, oh, geez, you got a new job. It's not that. It's opportunities to make disciples. And as you go, here it comes, you must baptize. And as you baptize, you'll baptize again. And as you baptize, you'll baptize again. And then you'll baptize again. And you'll baptize again. As you go making disciples, you'll baptize. Now, guys, there is a lot that can be said about baptism. And I don't want to get into it. This is not about a theology of baptism, all right? But it's enough to mention this. Now, these are all things that we understand. The scripture is very, very clear. It talks about water baptism. Remember in Romans chapter 6 where Paul says, you know, just as Christ went, died and put in the grave, so you in the waters of baptism put in the grave. And just as Jesus came up from the grave, so you come up out of the water. I mean, so we get this. So we get water baptism. We see how water baptism is very, very symbolic of two things that I'm going to get back to in just a minute. We are baptized in the Holy Spirit. So there's that baptism. By the way, baptism means not just to be immersed, but it's to be so overtaken by whatever you're baptized in that your nature changes. Let me do it like this. In classical Greek, they use the word baptism like this. They say a ship went out to sea, and it got hit by a storm, and it got sunk, and it got baptized. So in other words, the sea infiltrated every room in that ship, and the ship, which was made to sail on top of the water, its very nature has been changed. It's going to be at the bottom of the sea forever. It's never going to function like that again. Well, now think about it. You're baptized in the Holy Spirit. You should have every room of your life flooded by His presence so that the very nature of who you are changed forever. We in the New Testament, we are talked about being baptized into His body. Again, immersed into these relationships right here. And we're also talked about being baptized into Christ. So all these things are legitimate. And while a lot can be said and a lot should be said about baptism, that's just an awesome, that's just a great teaching, all right? Two things I want to say about baptism that are absolutely true. Baptism is about identity, and it is about identify. It's about identity, and it's about identify. When you are baptized, your identity changes forever. You are no longer alive to Randy. You are dead to Randy. And the life you now live, you live by the life of Christ. You don't live by the power or presence or activity of Randy any longer. And of course, you fill in your name. So it's a matter of identity. All right? Can I tell you something? Jewel and I have been very intentional over the last 2-3 years to engage with the millennials. Millennials, all right? I just looked at the millennials and I don't know what the heck they're doing, all right? And so I said, okay, Jesus, here's the deal. I want them. I want the whole generation. I want them. I want the millennials. Give me, and heck, I'll take the Z, Generation Z too. I want those two generations. I want them. Show me how to have them. And the first thing the Lord said, hey, probably ought to learn their language. I said, well, shouldn't they, learn mine? I mean, if I'm going to be the whoop-de-doo, then no. And so Jewel and I just became very, very intentional about engaging ourselves. We're the old people amongst the millennials. And we're basically there to sit at their feet and hear how they talk and see how they think and why they feel this about that and this about that. And we just want to be with them. We want to be with them. And so one of the things we learned is that millennials like to eat a lot of food, especially if somebody else is fixing it. So we would, my Jewel, she's the best. She's totally the best. Why she puts up with me is beyond me. And I don't want any of you to encourage her about not putting up with me. Just, you know, let her do what she's doing. But she likes to have like a clean house. Any of you ladies like to have like it's a thing? You know, I gotta have a clean house. I have a clean house. Me, I'm just, you know, I'm good. I mean, I don't not like it being clean, but I mean, it's not a thing with me, all right? So we're going to have, what, about 400 millennials over to the house? And with these millennials come all of their kids, and their kids are just wild, you know? And we're going to have them on over, and we're going to fix a big batch of macaroni and cheese and stuff like this. And they all come on in, and they're just trashing my house to the nth degree. And as soon as the last millennial leaves, she's got me cleaning up the house already. I mean, I don't even get a chance to catch my breath here. We're cleaning up the house for the next barrage of millennials, you know? So this is something that we've been very, very intentional about. We want to be baptized in these kids. We want their lives to infiltrate every part of our life. And one of the reasons is, and this is a generalization, and I don't like generalizations, but it's a pretty sound generalization. When it comes to millennials and Gen Z, they are in search for their identity. They are trying to figure out who they are. Who better to help them in that search than us? So the first component of baptism is a matter of identity. We secure our identity in Him. In Him, nobody else. In Him. The second thing is baptism was used way before the Christian movement started. You know, it was used in all kinds of ancient civilizations. And baptism was often used as an initiation rite. You were being initiated into a new community. So you want to join us? Yeah, I want to join you. Well, then you got to be baptized, because you're going to die down there in the water. And when you come up, you're going to see this new community that you're part of. You're no longer part of that community. You're part of this community. So the second part of baptism has to do with the people that you identify with. As you go, make disciples. Help them learn who they are. Help them learn what movement they're part of. What community is their new family. Let them eat at your table. Let them be part of you. As you go, make disciples. And how are we going to do this? Help them learn their new identity and help them find a place at the table with a new community. This is our mission, people. And then he goes on and he says this. He says, as you go, make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And then it says, teaching them. Some of our translations say, teaching them to obey. I do not like that at all. I mean, I understand it, but I don't like it, all right? Now, the reason I don't like it is because I can expect you to obey without even meeting you. I could just send a memo. I expect you to do this, this, and this. Now obey it, you know? And I don't like that at all. Especially that is not what's being talked about here. A much better translation, and many of our English translations render it this way, is teaching them to observe. Now let's break this down a little bit. Teaching them, again, it's in the aorist tense. So you're going to teach some people, and you're going to conclude the teaching. They're going to get it. They're going to get it. But then you're going to teach some other people, and they're going to get it. And then you're going to teach some other people. So,
yeah, but Brother Randy, I'm not a teacher. I don't have that gift. I'm not bright enough. I don't do that. Can I do something else?
No. You got to do that.
Well, should I take a course? No. Should I go to college? No. Should I read a really thick book? No.
True story with my son, Timothy. My son, we have four sons, and Timothy was the one that grew up. Wouldn't you say he honored me probably even more than the other boys? The other boys loved me and all that stuff, and it was great, but Timothy really kind of, you know, hero worship type thing, all right? And so Timothy would watch his dad's life. And dad is all about books. I am like all about books. My house, it's a disaster area. I got books all over the place, open, and it's just I study and la 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 la. So he's watching that, and inside he's going, I want to be like dad. And so he decides to go to college, where he flunks every course he takes. And he gets frustrated with that and upset with that and stuff. So he gives it another shot, and then he flunks every course that he takes. And I remember coming on up to him one day and saying, Timothy, what the heck is going on? You're flunking every course you're taking. And he began to cry. He said, Dad, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I want to be like you, but I can't do it. I just can't study all this stuff. I can't do it. And I went, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, when did you ever think I expected you to be that? And I released him from the expectation of being the book nerd that his father is. That guy has gifts and talents that go holy mackerel. I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff this guy can do. Stuff I can't do. And I had to release him from that false expectation. Today, I want to release you from that false expectation that you have in your head about what teaching is. I want you to understand what teaching is. Number one, teaching, the classroom of teaching is life. That's the classroom. The curriculum, and it's very important, so you need to jot this down. The curriculum for teaching is life lived out in full view. Life lived out in full view. When Jesus discipled his disciples, he taught them. He didn't teach them by saying, take the notes, write it down, get it down, here we go, we're in a classroom, blah, 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 blah. He didn't do that. What he did was he said, look at me. Look at me. I'm going to a wedding ceremony. I'm going to a funeral. I'm going to be amongst the multitude. I'm going to approach a leper. Watch me. I'm living my life in full view. Can I tell you something that one of the most remarkable statements in the scripture, comparing Christianity to any other religion, it just absolutely, every time I read it, it blows me away. You know what Jesus says? Jesus turns and he says, you are the light of the world. Now, every other religion, the deity is the light of the world. And in our faith, Jesus is the light of everything. But he turns to his disciples, the doubters. Remember the doubters?
He turns to his disciples, the tax collector. He turns to his disciples and he says, "You are the light of the world." And then he goes on and he says, "A city on a hill lights up everything." Our relationships together. Well, you obviously, I'm telling you what. You and I, in our relationships, we are that. What's the name of the county here? What are the two counties? Give me counties. Wake and Johnston? Okay, Johnston. In the Wake and Johnston counties, you are that city on a hill. But then he goes on and he says this: no one takes a light and puts it under a bushel. No. He takes the light and puts it on a stand to light the whole household. Christian, you individual disciple of Christ, you are that light in this household. Don't cover your light. Don't cover your... Do you see, I'm not telling you to take a course so you can teach. I'm just telling you, don't cover your light. If this is what Jesus has shown you how to live, live it like that. Yeah, but what will they say? Live it like that. Don't cover the light. You are the light of the world. What? So our classroom is life. Our curriculum is life lived out in full view. This is, and I'm even going to give you a homework assignment. You know what your homework assignment is to teach? Your homework assignment is mimic life. When you see the life of Jesus being reflected in any one of your brothers and sisters, mimic that. Copy it. Do that. That's what Jesus is saying when he's saying teach. He said, I want you to teach out in the world. That's the classroom. I want you to teach in a way where you just put your life right on out there in full view. Let everybody look at it. Let everybody look at it. Beth, she was part of a discipleship class with us. She's a sweet kid. She's a teacher. And she went back, and we had this particular part of the discipleship time where we talked about the power of prayer. And so she basically said, doggone it, I'm doing that. I believe in prayer. I pray. I'm doing that. I'm doing that wide open. I'm just doing that. And so she went to school and she went to the I don't know if it was the principal or the superintendent or who it was, but went to the superintendent and says, listen, I'm going to start a prayer meeting after hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the superintendent went, well, you just make sure it's after hours. And there'll be no publicizing this. There'll be no recruiting. There'll be none of that. And everything will be fine. We get 6 months into the school year, and that room is filled with students and teachers asking for prayer. She just took the cover off the light, and she let it shine. And now she's affecting an entire school system. It's absolutely immense. And she's just a cute kid is all she is. And then it says, teach them to obey or teach them to observe. I'm not a big fan of the obey thing because when I hear obey, I think of a list, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this, and then that is not what's going on. In the observe, what a better translation is to observe, because what the word actually means, to keep in full view, to keep in full view, keep it right there in full view in front of you, to keep it in full view and to save it, save that observation, Keep that, file that observation away. Don't forget that. As a matter of fact, that observation that you have made is so valuable that someone's going to try and steal it from you. So guard it. Set such a value on it that you guard it. So it's number one, it's to keep something in full view. Well, what are you keeping in full view? You're keeping in full view the life of your rabbi, the life of Christ. You're keeping him in full view. And you value that so much that you're going to store. Do you remember when Jesus, or when Mary, all this stuff was going on, the angels coming and you're going to have pregnant and you're going to have a baby and all this stuff. And then they have the baby and they take it to the temple and people are prophesying all over the baby. And it says this of Mary twice. She treasured these things in her heart. When you have an encounter, and you have had an encounter, when you have an encounter with the living Christ, treasure that. Store that away. That's the real deal. And understand, someone's going to try and steal it from you. Anybody know what I'm talking about? They're going to try and steal it from you. So protect it. Guard it. Teach. Teach in life. Teach by living life. Learn by mimicking life. Teach people to observe, to take note of the life of Christ, to value the life of Christ, and to protect your heart. Protect that which you have seen. As you go, make disciples. Help them understand who they are and who they belong to. Teach them. Teach them to observe all that Jesus has commanded. And then he ends up the thing by saying this, "And I am with you." Omnipresence. What does omnipresence mean? Big theological word. What does omnipresence mean? Somebody, go ahead, give it to me. Everywhere. He's everywhere all the time, right? So if he's everywhere all the time, what the heck does he mean by saying, "I will be with you"? Why, of course you'll be with me. You're everywhere all the time. What is going on with that? This is Jesus' commitment to make manifest his presence. It's not just Jesus is everywhere all the time. He is there. He is with you. If, while you are going, you are making disciples, baptizing, and teaching. I just so want the presence of God to be active in my life. Oh, Jesus, I just really want your presence to be active in my life. Oh, Pastor, would you pray for me? Because I want the presence of God to be active in my life. Would somebody help me with the presence of God being active in my life? I can help you. Go make disciples. Because Jesus has pledged himself. You do that, I'll be with you. I will manifestly be with you. That's my commitment. So this Great Commission is just, it's just nuts. It is just totally nuts. It's just okay. So what time is it? What time? When do I stop? 11:30. Oh, baby, we're in for it. All right? Stand up, shake it on out. Tell somebody, talk to one another. Get up from your thing, talk to one another. Tell somebody he is out of his mind. You know, tell him something. You know, just tell him something. I'm so glad he said this. I can't believe he said that. Just get it on out there. Get it on out there, and then we're gonna keep going.